The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perro columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers Podcast. Today we've got an interesting one, Atavale Resources. ASX code is ADD. No jokes here about adding this one to your portfolio. But I will say it's 0.5 cents for a market cap of just over $5 million. So with all Explorers, with that sort of market cap, obviously lots of leverage to exploration success. And to bring us up to speed with what the company's up to across its nickel interests in Tanzania and a newly put together big ground position in South Australia, focusing on uranium, obviously, we have David Rickey, the Managing Director, with us today. G'day, David. Welcome to the podcast.
G'day, Barry, or Garen Paros. you've killed my first opening line, which was obviously, you know, the tacky call to say you've got to add Atavale to your portfolio, and it's a simple one. But
I saw you do it in a couple of presentations, and it went a bit flat, so I thought I'd help you out. So.
So maybe I shouldn't have mentioned that, but thank you for that assistance, and I'll take it on advice next time, so I won't add to the portfolio.
Now, the real news with the company is this South Australian uranium push. Give us a feel for when it started and what you've managed to assemble in that part of the world.
Yeah, look. It is a good introduction to Atavale. I mean, we are blessed with, you know, two future-facing commodities or minerals, you know, the uranium in South Australia, which essentially was a legacy asset, which we've actually become a lot more interested in. It was inherited when I first stepped into Atavale. It was a reasonably modest package of about 500 square Ks, which has sort of reduced a little bit. And we tried to build on that. And I mean, we're, you know, like everything, we think we're an overnight success when we've been trying to tackle the assemblage of this portfolio probably over the last 2 years. So we've been quietly assembling that, you know, and we'll probably end up having circa 2,000 square kilometres under our control on the basis we complete a deal that's just been consummated with Kilanova to acquire a bit more ground, which is a bit more brownfields. The package we have... there we can talk about in a bit more detail, but the other one we do have that has actually found a lot of favour at the moment is the nickel portfolio that we've assembled over in Tanzania, and that's the, you know, circa 1,300 square kilometres. So as you will see, we've got quite a, you know, solid package in areas that we think are very prospective and offer a lot of opportunity and appeal.
I think most investors will be aware of the Tanzania nickel hunt. But for those who aren't aware, just fill us in on that. So we're talking sulfide nickel in a part of the world where is well known for the Kabanga deposit, which is one that BHP has an interest in, 58 million tonnes at 2.6 nickel, a sort of deposit that good money can be made out of, not all that dissimilar in grades to the Nova mine in Western Australia that IGO reported yesterday. It was still generating about $50 million of free cash flow a quarter. So we know that nickel is a bit distressed at the moment, but it has bounced back. So what are your plans over there in Tanzania?
Yeah, look, it's a very interesting opportunity. You know, Kabanga's now expanded to about 90 million tonnes, would you believe, and it's maintained that grade. So that's something that the outfit LifeZone, which is a New York Stock Exchange listed entity, has actually been, you know, proudly announced, which is fantastic for them. But yes, you are right. You know, BHP has actually lifted its eyes and said, you know, to the horizon, and that included Tanzania, and, you know, probably labouring this point, but essentially you've got to go and find something that is going to be long life, high grade and low cost, and they've actually had that featuring in their thinking, and, you know, it's a very tantalising opportunity, and that actual project area essentially has been restricted to the resource. So we've assembled a package that effectively surrounds it, which is about 1,300 square kilometres. Yes, you pointed out quite rightly that it is a nickel sulfide opportunity, and most of the disruption and, you know, the source of nickel going into the market more stainless steel is being driven by laterite opportunities. It is a pure nickel sulfide play. We've been able to interrogate by way of drilling, diamond drilling, doing gravity EM over this area over the last 2.5 years. And you know, whilst we aren't sort of favoured by the nickel gods with a smiling face and an opportunity to take advantage of that, you are quite right. You know, the nickel price has actually emerged off the deck from about $15,000 up to about $19,000. And I think the magic number for me and many others is probably about $22,000, which is US$10 a pound. But it is a feature of high grade nickel that we've actually hit. We've hit massive sulfides. We don't have the same sort of high grade antenna in our core at this point in time. But I think we've had some pretty good success rates, 5 drill holes out of 5 that have pierced this. So we see that the structure exists there. And we just need to find, you know, those mechanisms to get people to join us with this journey. And I think that's, in simple synopsis, that's where we see ourselves, Barry.
So the same sort of rocks at Kabanga presumably run through some sort of belt, do they? Is it a known nickel belt yet, or is it just Kabanga at this stage?
No, look, it's some of the notable technicians, David Evans and like, have actually described this area as the East African nickel belt. And I think that's very apt. You know, it extends all the way from Uganda through Tanzania and down into Burundi. And it actually has these noted anomalies or areas of mineralized structures that trend on a northeast southwest type basis. And it's actually been demonstrated with the activities previously with, you know, BHP owning this this ground many years ago, and it's fallen to Barrick and Glencore. That a lot of these areas are fertile, but with the events that happened in Tanzania around the genocide in Rwanda, a lot of these areas became refugee camps. So much of the information that was assembled was back in the 80s and 90s, and it stalled, and a nickel price wasn't big, but there's an opportunity there, and we're going to be taking advantage of that.
Mm. Just interested on your thoughts. There's an evolving story. Is the potential for, you know, a green nickel premium to give the sulfide producers a bit of a leg up visit compared with the laterite producers out of Indonesia, which are very carbon intensive. Do you think it's a real possibility?
I think the power of people and the end user does actually dictate what they're happy. You know, if they want to become, you know, more attuned with the environment and ESG, I think that's a possibility. But, you know, most hard-nosed, you know, practical builders of cars and, you know, utilizers of nickel won't pay. I don't think they'll pay a massive premium. They will pay a premium if it's actually been, you know, demonstrated that it's in the best interest and it's long-term and it's sustainable. If you get the wrong, you know, messaging going out there and mining's not sustainable, it's going to be the bane of the life of many people in that space. There'll be resistance, and it shouldn't be. You need to try and do the right thing as best you can. So yes, I think the answer will be that there will be a premium that can be paid, and I think this low emissions is the way to go. You know, just finding something that's practical.
Right. Yeah, well, you're being very realistic there too. You know, some people are screaming for this nickel green premium from sulfide ores almost to save their high-cost operations. But I'm wondering, how does Tanzania shape up? A low-cost place to mine, access to infrastructure, power, et cetera?
Yeah, look, good. You know, it's a mining-facing jurisdiction. It recognises the fact that it's blessed with, you know, abounding, you know, gold and, you know, graphite and mineral sands and nickel. Copper and other opportunities. They want to see the value add happening in the country. But you've touched on a really important point. I might have said before, long life, high grade, low cost, you know, quartile has to be supported with infrastructure and like. And that's something that is going to be a feature of how Tanzania will reemerge as a real powerhouse in Africa. They've certainly got a willingness. They've got infrastructure going in. They've got hydropower where we're going to be. Where Lifezone is going to be a miner. They've got aspirations of having a refinery based in a strategic hub at Kahama, and that's something that BHP's obviously got on its drawing boards. Obviously, it needs to consider, you know, what impact it's going to have with, you know, what has to happen in Australia. But you've got to go to those sort of places that do have the ability for long life, low cost. And then it's an investment decision, and you work out, you know, whether you become a meaningful supplier of a future facing metal and nickel. And with all the stuff that's going on with BHP at the moment, Barry, you know, aspirations of Anglo America basically forming part of their portfolio, and they've got other things in that mix. If they want to pivot away from just pure, I'm not telling BHP what to do, please. I'm sure they will be listening from there anyway, but you've got to look at those things, those opportunities that are in these lower cost jurisdictions, you know, mining friendly, and I think we're well positioned with that.
I understand there's a bit of a wet season there. I'm not sure where it's at the moment, but I was wondering if you can give us a feel for the 2024 exploration program.
Yeah, look, we actually did have a bit of a crazy wet season this year. I think probably most of the world's actually gone through a few grumblings as to, you know, it being a bit unseasonal. The wet season did continue. We parked up the diamond rig at this point in time, and the intention is for us to go back and quickly assess over the course of this year those areas using air core that have actually demonstrated, you know, these ultramafic rock types that we think we've got quite extensively on our ground holdings. And rather than doing, you know, diamond drilling and RC drilling at this stage, given where we are in this nickel cycle, we want to try and delineate those areas that we think offer the most potential for bringing in, you know, the big boys, you know, the drilling rigs that we're going to drill down to the 300 to 500, 600 meters, because that's what Kabanga found is stylized on. And we found that I think the emergence of that in our thinking, and that's where we're getting these encounters in the mineral, the massive sulfides. The mineralization is there. We've got these thin veins of high grade. To be able to drill this out properly, you need a bigger balance sheet. And I think that's where we're looking to see other parties join us on this journey. So we would be entertaining those sorts of project level opportunities, and more particularly a party that will basically move forward with a more comprehensive drilling program that will support what we're going to do in this current season.
Oh, that's encouraging, because the shortage of quality sulfide nickel projects, or potential quality sulfide nickel projects, means that the big boys of the industry are looking for and are willing nowadays to strike deals with juniors and keep them in the game.
Well, that's certainly our aspiration. I think you've hit the nail on the head. You know, you've got to find those places where, and there are other places in the world, you know, you've seen it in Canada, but it seems to be, you know, bigger volumes but lower grade. You know, you've got opportunities in Russia and China. But if you want to go into a new province, this seems to be, this whole East African nickel belt has this feature which we like, which is high grade, and it's long life, and it's, like I said, potentially low cost.
So cracking the whip a bit here, when might there be some news either on the strategic joint venture partner or drilling results or from the company itself?
Well, I'd be surprised if you weren't cracking the whip because, you know, we would like to think that, you know, we've been in discussions with parties at the front end of this year. I think that the prevailing nickel price has actually seen a lot of people revisit it and try and keep it in context of what they want to do. You know, all the big boys that you'd expect have actually expressed some level of interest in what we were doing. We just need to make sure that level of dialogue continues. You know, I'm hopeful, and I'm genuinely confident that we should see something over the next 3 months. And I think that our drilling programs will be dictated by how extensive they will be on the basis of those discussions. But certainly the air core is a very modest, you know, it's high impact, low cost type opportunity. You know, we're drilling down to hitting the basement rock and saying, yes, we've either got ultramafics or we've not got anything, so we'll move on. But we can do that quickly. So that reconnaissance will happen probably over the next 3 months as well.
I've always argued that you can be a $5 million company, doesn't excuse you from doing more than one thing at a time. And you guys have done just that by building this South Australian uranium presence in a part of the world best known for production from, well, Heathgate Beverley Mine and the $2 billion ASX-listed Boss Energy in that broader area. So what are you looking for there, and what stage are you at with?
Well, look, use that old adage. I mean, I think fortune favours the brave, and we've been brave to go and start pegging some ground around this area called Mundowdner, which is a bit further south of our Lake Surprise assets. But we've gone there for a specific reason. You know, South Australia is where uranium mining and exploration has and will happen and continue. Big boy boss, fantastic. Well done, Duncan Crabbe and your team. You know, getting that a drum of Yolo Cake rolling out has just been fantastic news for us and many others. You know, South Australia has been at the forefront of actually pushing forward with uranium. You've rightly touched on the fact that, you know, a Heathgate has been there, Beverley 4 Mile, you know, private company, you know, fairly limited with regards to, you know, the transparency is not really there. Yeah. They don't need to
I can use the word secretive, yeah.
Sure, you can use the word secretive, and I would agree with that. They don't actually sort of furnish a lot of information, but they don't have to.
Yeah.
You know, TriStar, the other big boys in that area, big private outfit, they've got a big swag of land, and I mean a very big land package, and they like this area. But you've got a lot of other parties, aspirationals like us, which have started to assemble these grant holdings. And I might have mentioned that we've gone from about, you know, 400 square kilometres up to about 2,000 square kilometres here. Just so people in their mind's eye recognise this, Beverley 4 Mile and Boss is over to the eastern flank, eastern side of the Flinders Ranges. The Flinders Ranges are the source. So you've got these inliers that are actually sort of shedding off towards Beverley 4 Mile, paleo channels where they've got these high-grade accumulations. Plus there is some faulting there. The areas that have been delineated by Boss are further to the south and a slightly different structure, same sort of stylized rocks that have got the source, and that's where that outwash is shedding to. I'm using the words outwash and shedding because we think that the Flinders Ranges hosting it, when they actually do have a flood or an outwash, and we found these paleo channels and drainage systems, push to the north, northwest and to the northeast, and that's been demonstrated by you know, people that have now pegged all this ground. You know, it's kind of like a no vacancy sign that's gone up in this area, Barry, because we've seen that we've accumulated this over the last couple of years, and there are a couple of other listeds that are there. Orpheus, you've got Havilah down to the south, you've got Orpheus up near us, but most of the other guys are privates, and you won't see a lot of information. We're probably the only other. I think we've got the as an ASX listed, we've probably got the largest grant holding in that little province, that area. And we just finished a maybe I've gone and get ahead of myself. We are finishing closing out on a deal with Kilanova that actually was previously owned by Cauldron. And that's I claim this is a bit more brownfields because they've actually demonstrated that they've discovered these paleo channels and they've actually delineated the emergence of some of these redox boundary, you know, effectively where these paleo channels, you know, drop the uranium out. So we've got that information and we've got that package, which is further to the north. And we're using that knowledge to actually start and assist us with our program that is has basically just completed the ground field work in this Mundowna area. So it's a pretty exciting time for us.
Okay. And that recently completed program, what did that entail?
That was predominantly we're using the station tracks on this ground, so it enabled us to get on the ground as quickly as we possibly could. What it entailed was a gravity survey, which effectively was picking up the density, so in other words, the lower density, which is the emergence of these paleo channels. We've overlaid there on that a spectrometer, which actually picks up any surface uranium, and we kind of, it's a bit of a negative pledge type scenario. We don't really want to see a lot of peaks with the spectrometer because we'd either see it's more buried and it's actually at depth. And we've also overlaid that with about 800 samples using a thing called metal ion leach, a thing called TerraLeach. And what it does, it actually provides signature elements and in a very, very modest sample form. So we're taking 200 gram samples, we've done 800 of those, and we will test for the emergence of uranium and lead and some of the critical assemblages and correlations by way of ratios that are there. Sounds a bit technical, but essentially it will give you the signature of the uranium that we see, hope to see at depth. So collaborate all, you know, basically put all in together. When we first did this, we used the open file information and we're using that EM data to overlay it. So it's a bit like a chocolate cake. You know, we've got all of this, you know, layering of information to give us the best vector for where we should be drilling.
Absolutely. Again, what will the flow of news be in terms of results from that sampling program?
Well, we'll get an update to market very shortly on the fact that we've finished ahead of time and ahead of schedule on the surveys itself. The soils go to the lab and have been dropped off at the lab in Adelaide. They'll be whisked over to Maddington over here with Intertech in Perth. They'll undertake the surveys on those soil samples, which will take about 4 to 6 weeks. So we see probably by end of May, June, we will have those results and we'll have some interpretations. So what we'd like to see in that period of time, the soils correlate where we think we should be starting to do more clearance and getting into drill ready and or possibly a few more soils before we start pincushioning it. But running parallel with this, the Killinova ground, these McDonald Creek and George Creek uranium prospects, we will be able to use information we've got from historical operations to start doing some drilling there as soon as we can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just a general question. I've mentioned the company's modest market cap. Obviously, lots of leverage there to exploration success, either on the uranium front or on the nickel sulfide front. So you've got the two fronts now working for you. So I'm guessing you think the company's undervalued.
Well, if an MD or CEO at ED doesn't say it's massively undervalued, he's probably not doing his job or her job. But I do certainly think that we've got a lot of value catalysts that we're undertaking at the moment. Cash position is about 1.6 at 31 March. We think these programs that we're currently completed at South Australia is going to cost us around about 120 grand. The drilling probably close to double that, depending on what patterns we drill. Like I said, the air core is more 150, 200 grand over the same sort of period. So we've got sufficient funds to actually meet those targeted activities. And yeah, look, I think the it's always going to be barriers. It's always going to be results in the core or in the rock chips or the cuttings. And that's what we're marching towards as soon as we can. That's when the real excitement starts to peak. And that's happening this year, middle of the year.
Great stuff. Okay. There we go, folks. Very interesting story on two fronts, nickel in Tanzania and uranium, opening up potentially a new uranium fairway there in South Australia. So lots to look forward to. David, thanks for your time today. Good luck with it all. We'll be watching with interest.
Pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity to share those views, Barry. That's grand. Cheers, mate.